Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hey, Sound Opinions listeners. If you support us on Patreon, you get to listen to our podcast ad-free on Patreon.
Who took the bomb?
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we're talking with Margot Price about her book, Maybe We'll Make It. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, we review some new music from Robin Hitchcock and Planes.
I sit out the window, I sit out the law. I'm gonna see what the shuffle man saw. Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes, oh yes, oh yes. Stacks a lit by gas line, stars a lit by jazz.
That is a little bit of a song called The Shuffle Man by Robin Hitchcock from his new album, Shuffle Mania. Starting out as a folky in Cambridge, England, Mr. Hitchcock went on to front the very influential psychedelic pop band, the Soft Boys. This at the height of the punk explosion in England. You know, everybody was tearing everything down, and Hitchcock was singing with the Soft Boys, "I Want to Destroy You," making fun of that attitude. After the Soft Boys, he started a long and fruitful solo career. He is now up to, depending on how you count, 22 solo albums. Hitchcock is living these days in Nashville with a partner, Emma Swift, who is collaborating on this album with him. You know, he apparently, unusual in his long career, he's now 69, went into a period of not writing any songs, wondered if there was much point anymore during the pandemic. Then he bounced back with a very productive songwriting spree. He tapped Greg long distance, some of his many fans and collaborators, including Johnny Marr of the Smiths is on guitar, Sean Lennon. Obviously, Hitchcock, always a huge fan of Sean's dad, Wilco's Pat Sansone, and others. So let's play a track from Shuffle Mania. We'll come back and give our opinions of this record. This is called The Man Who Loves the Rain on Sound Opinions.
In watery handwriting scattered in drops on my window pane, he wrote, "I am the weather vane. I'm the man who loves the rain."
Is The Man Who Loves the Rain from the new Robin Hitchcock record, Shuffle Mania. You know, you mentioned the guests on this record. He also reunited with Soft Boys alums.
Yeah.
Kimberly Rue and Morris Windsor.
Yeah, there was an actual Soft Boys reunion a couple of years
which
back.
Which is really cool. You know, I almost feel like in some ways it's a summing up record for Hitchcock. His 2017 record, self-titled, was a late career, although Robin seems infinite, so I hesitate to call it late career.
Timeless.
But just a fantastic record.
Yeah.
I think this record is in the same league with that one, which means it's one of the best records of Hitchcock's career. You know, he calls it his party record, but with Hitchcock, It's always a little bit tongue-in-cheek as well. A party record in terms of some of the upbeat songs. You know, we played Shuffle Man at the top, and that is an exuberant, high-energy track, and there are several others on this record. Mixed in with, songs that are a little more poignant, atmospheric, like the one we just played, The Man Who Loves the Rain.
Yeah.
An absolutely beautiful song. It says, respect the dead, you'll be joining them soon.
Yeah.
Respect the dead. You will be joining them soon.
I think this record is coming from a place of, you know, with pandemic in the foreground, you know, there's a lot of randomness to life. You can't predict it. You never know what's coming around the corner. Yeah. You never know what's going to be lurking in the background.
Well, and you mentioned the Soft Boys reunion. Matthew Seligman, the bass player from the Soft Boys, had died during the pandemic. And I think that hit Robin.
Absolutely. The whole idea that anything could happen at any time. And if you start turning into, you know, like a nervous person based on that, and the anxiety can kill you, why not just embrace the fact that it is going to be totally random and willy-nilly? You just live every moment
right
to the best of your capability. So I'm hearing that message in this record, and I think it's a really profound lesson that we all learned, you know, and Robin is giving voice to it. 10 songs in 40 minutes. He's a brilliant pop songwriter, and I think that continues.
No, he absolutely is a brilliant pop songwriter. I've said it many times. There are, on any of those 22 or so solo albums, a minimum of 3 or 4 classic masterpiece kind of pop songs, right? And on a great record, the whole darn thing, right? I think if you have slept on Hitchcock, you know, you are missing just some of the best pop songwriting of the last century. And, you know, I have a theory about this album, Greg. If you go back to Fagmania, which was him and the Egyptians when they were signed to A&M, right? That weird period, post-indie rock at the burgeoning of alternative. Maybe we can make money with this guy. He's got major label support. And that was one of the great celebratory party albums of Hitchcock's career. I don't think it's a coincidence. Shuffle Mania, Feg Mania. Mm-hmm. These songs, many of them are in that vein, right? Shuffle Man opens the album, just like Balloon Man from those days by Hitchcock, okay? And so he's having fun. You know, it's been a long end of the world, and it's opening up again. Robin's celebrating. He's 69, about to turn 70. He's still with us. He's still brilliant, and he's having fun, along with those, you know, I can't even say it, noirer than noir. You know, I think that's a sequel in some ways to one of his greatest songs, Raymond Chandler Evening.
You've got to be noir than noir. You are.
You know, and The Man Who Loves the Rain is just a beautiful pop song without the Dolly in it, without much surrealism. The man's a genius. I'm glad we still have him.
Absolutely. 5 decades into his career and still making great records. You know,
and
deigning how many people can say that?
Deigning to come on Sound Opinions like 3, 4, 5 times over the years.
Well, Main Street was cute and the rents there were cheap, but I was too much for you and for your We don't need to talk about Abilene, 'cause Abilene don't mean no couple acres, no screened in porch, so I don't talk about Abilene no more.
That is a little bit of the track Abilene from the debut album by a group called Plains. I Walked With You A Ways is the name of the album. And who is Plains? Well, that is a duo. Waxahachie's Katie Crutchfield is one half of it, and the other half is Jess Williamson. Two singer-songwriters in the country folk indie rock vein. One, Waxahachie, Katie Crutchfield from Alabama, Jess Williamson, a Texas native. They have been friends for 5 years. And decided to make a record together. They're, you know, it's an interesting timing on this because both are coming off of what a lot of people are considering their finest solo records yet, Waxahachie's St. Cloud and Williams's Sorceress came out in the last couple of years, and everyone's thinking their careers are ascendant. And, you know, instead of making the follow-up solo records, they decided we want to collaborate. So here is the product of that collaboration. Here's a track from the new album, Summer Sun from Plains on Sound Opinions.
Summer sun melts candles. I dig out the wick. Honey, we're up against something. Our love alone can't fix. So I won't see the garden or the figs when they are ripe. It hurts to be leaving, but I know
that was Summer Sun, the opening track on I Walked With You A Ways by the duo Plains. Greg, I'm seeing this collaboration of Katie Crutchfield and Jess Williamson compared to Kurt Vile and Courtney Barnett. I'm seeing it compared to the High Women. And there are moments of yes, inspiration here, where the two are clearly taking each other in places they might not have gone as solo artists, as talented as they both are. You know, a lot of talk about speeding down the highway with the windows open. Mm-hmm. The four-lane highway, they love their highway.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess as the world is opening again after the pandemic, everybody's eager to hit the road. You, no fan of road trips, have been traveling all over the place of late. I think it would have been a good EP. I don't know if the inspiration is sustained over the course of this album. I like their voices together. You know, it is at times a little slavishly trad alt country, you know, and at other times they're having fun and kind of channeling Dolly Parton or Tanya Tucker, you know, kind of country pop, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just don't love the whole album. Am I wrong? What am I missing?
Well, let's not forget that both of these women are coming from country backgrounds that they really haven't explored in their individual records.
No, at times Waxahachie's been punk almost.
Yeah, I mean, Williamson coming from Texas, steeped in, you know, country music was around all the time. It was in her house. She grew up with it. Ditto for Katie Crutchfield, Waxahachie. Alabama upbringing, a lot of country music, mm-hmm. in that background. You know, you're harmonizing around the kitchen sink with your, you know, your family, your,
yeah,
friends,
or
right?
Back porch or campfire.
So
yeah,
they're steeped in that music, and I think they wanted to honor that part of their past, even though they come from, one's from the Southeast, one's from the Southwest. They have that mutual thing in common, and they wanted to sort of honor that. So, okay, they're the signifiers are there, but I think they do it more, much more realistically, much more sincerely than a lot of assembly line Nashville country pop. You know, the soft, the brushes on the drums, the mandolins, the banjos, the steel guitar, a lot of, you know, not a lot, but certainly some waltz tempos. The lyrics are very plain spoken. It's over in 30 minutes. I mean, it's a very concise record of just mutual love, you know, of something that meant a lot to them growing up, right? That's the way I hear it. I don't think they're trying to make some big statement here other than they just love making music together.
No, I think it's a placeholder record. You talked about both of them being, you know, career ascendant. I think rather than the pressure of the, you know, much anticipated follow-up, what are you doing next?
Mm-hmm.
You know, during the downtime of the last 2 years, you know, they had this project to kind of offset that. You know, touring is still very difficult for many musicians. So it's was kind of something to do, but I'd have been fine with an EP. I really like their cover of Bella Fatima.
Uh-huh.
Her face red like an old Karenina. She was strong as that old gypsum weed. Though she could dance like a blind beggar's head, just waiting for some.
Williamson's voice on that is just absolutely gorgeous. I love the song Abilene that we bumped in with. I'm feeling love, though, for Abilene. We just got added to public radio in Abilene, Texas.
But, you know, think about this. I mean, a lot of this album's about relationships, right? Mm-hmm. You know, coming and go. Relationships come and go is basically what I'm hearing in a lot of the lyrics. You know, it's time to move on.
Yeah, but move on on the four-lane highway.
The one thing that's always going to stick around is the music, you know? Come along with us, we'll be here for you the whole time. That's the lyric from Summer Sun that opens. It's kind of like opening its arms to you and saying, here we are, here's what we're going to do. This music is going to be with us our entire lives. We're going to go through all these relationships, but this music's always going to be there for us. I think that's a nice message.
It's not a bad record. It just didn't get me super excited. But that's our thoughts. We want to hear from you. Leave us a message on our voicemail at soundopinions.org or chime in on our Patreon or Facebook groups.
Coming up, our conversation with Margot Price on Sound Opinions. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, lemonade, shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island. So we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. And we are back. It's been 4 years since Margot Price was first on Sound Opinions, episode 655, if you go to the archives. Back then, she'd released her second album for Third Man Records, All American Made. She has now released That's How Rumors Get Started in 2020, and a new album called Strays is coming early in 2023. But today, we have Margot back on the show to talk about her role as an author. A fascinating memoir called Maybe We'll Make It.
Margot, welcome to Sound Opinions.
Hey, how's it going?
Margot, I got to ask you, this book takes you from your childhood, growing up on a farm that goes bankrupt when you're a kid, to Saturday Night Live as Midwest Farmer's Daughter, your first
big breakthrough,
nationally acclaimed record, top 10 record. And in between, there's sort of a Kerouacian journey through your life.
That's a good word, Kerouacian.
I am just blown away by all the struggles and the resilience that you had to show to keep the idea that you were going to make music, you were going to make this music thing work. Because I've interviewed hundreds, thousands, probably thousands of bands at this point. And it's like, at a certain point, you just give up because it's just too damn hard. And you had plenty of reasons not to have it work out. In looking back at this book, the struggles you document so well here, what do you attribute to that resilience? Because I don't think it's that commonplace, especially in a brutal industry like the music industry is.
Well, either insanity or just plain stubbornness. you know, I often wonder, had Third Man not kind of plucked me out of my misery, if I would still be doing this. And I really think probably, yes, I think I would probably just at least be playing and writing songs for myself, because I just don't do anything else quite as well. But it was a wild ride. And I actually I'm just really grateful that I did it my way. And even now, I cannot get too in my head about success and, like, you know, putting these certain things that are not real things in there, because for me, I just have to keep focusing on the art, because if you get lost in like the accolades, you're immediately like poisoning the art itself.
Yeah, I was thinking as I was reading it, Margot, the frankness, the honesty, the humor, you were not hiding anything. And, you know, when I teach, sometimes students come to me and say, you know, how do I make it? And I always say, and it's easy for me or Greg to say this, you got to want it as much as you like breathing or eating. And if you don't, go into something else. And that comes through so vividly. So, you know, you drop out of college and decide to move to Nashville. A lot has happened in the story before that. A lot happens after. We'll dig into some of it. But if that young woman or man came to you at that age that you were and said to you today, is it worth my time? Should I try this? What would you say to them? I mean, besides having written a whole
book. I'll give you the cliff notes. I would say absolutely. Follow your passion and you really can't go wrong. I mean, like you said, you do have to love it as much as breathing or eating. I'm really struggling right now to like find time in my life to get everything done with like the book and the music and all of that coming together. There's like a list of friends and I'm like, oh, I need to write. I didn't write her back. I haven't seen this friend in like 7 or 8 months. You know, I go back to that, like I'm paraphrasing Townes Van Zandt here, but it's just like, you have to sacrifice everything. You're going to sacrifice your friendships. You're going to sacrifice family and stability and all of those things. But to me, it's worth it. Actually, yesterday, I just canceled my therapy appointment and my dentist appointment because I got the opportunity to go meet with T-Bone Burnett. And like,
it's a good excuse.
And it was really good. But, you know, it's really hard sometimes to like just take care of myself mentally and physically. And I think that's why musicians' lifespans don't quite seem to last as long as others, because you're just like, there's some days where I find myself in a food desert and I'm like eating at a sheets. And I'm like, this sucks. But I get to go play like Farm Aid with Willie and the crew. So
there's a great moment in the book where you talk about your great uncle giving you some tough love. He was a songwriter and won some awards and he had gold records on the wall. And you played him some songs with kind of the hope that he was going to give you his blessing and say, kid, you've got what it takes, you know, keep sticking with it. And he basically told you the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, not even, he couldn't even spare, like, I like that one metaphor.
Right.
Nothing you write.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So what made you keep going after that?
Well, you know, like I said, I feel like whenever anybody tells me no or like gets me angry, it just like fuels the fire. I don't know if it's because I'm an Aries or what it is, but him and I are still very close. It feels full circle that I've finally garnered his respect, because he's calling me and he's like, I got a song idea. You want to write this one with me? And he comes over to the house, and actually I've got sitting behind me is this guitar that I've had hero signs. Got, you know, Willie, Dolly, Loretta, Emmylou, and I got my uncle's signature on there too. But yeah, like I said, when somebody tells me that I can't do something, then I just have to prove them wrong.
Well, it was almost like he gave you a test, because he told you, sell your TV, sell your computer, get rid of all distractions, and write, write, write. And then it was, because it's true, if you don't have that kind of drive, you're not going to make it.
Yeah. I mean, it hurt. It definitely hurt to hear. I'm a very sensitive, a highly sensitive person. I left there, I got in my car and I just started crying. But it was the best advice anyone could really give me. And I think, you know, today people are dealing with so many distractions. I say that too. It's like, if you're going into the studio, get your phone out of the control booth, get off your phone, be in the moment. You know, that's what everybody I think is struggling to find, that focus today, whatever your passion is, whether it's music or whatever. You know, we get lost in those other things. I'm always pulling myself back in.
I was laughing. I was telling my wife this morning about reading the book, and I said, you know what? What was great about this book? there wasn't one mention of social media in 250 pages.
Till I talk about...
No, you're wrong. The Saturday Night Live crew made Margot go on Instagram and Twitter, and it was...
But it was like on page 250.
It's at the very end of the book. It's true. Yeah. Well, and you discovered... People suck.
Yeah.
You know, people are talking about your nose. People are talking about, you know, who is this woman?
Yeah. Jesus. It's still going on. Still going on when I get in there. I'm like, I don't look too closely at the comments sometimes or check my DMs because it's just like landmines in there. You don't know what you're going to find. But also I talk about when we went out to Colorado and we were trying to get gigs out there. That was when everything was happening. They're like, well, what's your, do you have a Facebook page? Do you, you know, what's your online presence? And we were like, oh, we don't have Facebook. We were like some of the last people to get on it. And I remember when I had my first meeting, one of my first meetings with Jack and his management team, who ends up, you know, managing me with Monotone. And they started talking about social media. And I remember Jack had been quiet the whole meeting. And all of a sudden he leans in and he's like, now, when you say, Instagram and Twitter, are you talking about a toothpaste brand or what? He's like, I'm not sure what's going on, you know, and he's since relented and he has an Instagram account, but I really loved how skeptical he was of all that. And he's,
I can just see that, having made the trek down to Third Man in Nashville, Jack in his office with those cigarillos saying, you know, what's Instagram? Is that toothpaste?
Yeah.
The volume, you know, and the songwriting lesson really took hold because, you know, what struck me is how much you're talking about music and writing songs all along, like from that day forward. And very little of that got out into the world. You recorded some of it. Those records never really, they were basically, you were selling them out of your trunk, right? I mean, it wasn't like you were putting these things out into the world. There was nobody distributing them for you other than you. So there was a lot of songs you wrote along the way. I would love for the Margot Price box set to come out one day where we get some of the best of those leftover tracks. I mean, but the point being that once you got to, you know, Midwest Farmer's Daughter, you had like 10 really great songs on that record.
I can't count all the time.
You were ready to come to bat when the moment struck. But do you feel like you had to go through that process of writing songs over, you know, countless songs, many of which never really got an airing other than when you would perform them in your shows, in order to finally get to the point where you could put out a record that the world would embrace? I mean, it was a top 10 country record, you know? Not an easy thing to do on your debut record, right?
Did you need to spend a quarter century becoming an overnight success? I think that's the question Greg's asking.
A long time to get to that point where you're... Yeah.
I definitely needed all that time. I mean, there are very few people who are... The first songs that they're writing are going to be genius. And, you know, John Prine was among one of those people. It's like when the first songs that he was writing was Donald and Lydia and Sam Stone and all the, you know... That is really rare. That's a genius level songwriting right there. But
yeah, but don't forget he was singing those songs to himself for years and years and years while delivering mail.
Yep, exactly. I mean, you know, there's definitely was stuff that I was doing with Buffalo Clover or just my solo stuff that was good, and it, you know, it was better than a lot of the crap that we were hearing on the radio. So that kept me going, too, because I was like, well, you know, when this is what I'm hearing on the radio, of course, my songs aren't going to be popular, you know, in that way. But we have been for years, we've been working on this compilation of like unreleased Buffalo Clover stuff, all these, you know, all these old recordings we have. And I have definitely been thinking about doing some kind of soundtrack, like along to the book, with some of those songs that I really loved from those times. But also, I was finding my voice. I never was working with a producer. So it's like when I go back and I'm listening to my singing, I'm like, oh, I haven't even found my voice yet. You know, I was singing in my lower register. And so some of it's kind of, it is a little hard for me to hear, but I think a lot of the writing actually still holds up, you know? But some of it doesn't. Some of it's cringy. So I'm lucky that it took me that long. Well, so I'm not singing songs that I hate at 39.
Right. And the other thing that's interesting to me is, like, obviously, you know, Midwest Farmer's Daughter came across as a country record. You know, people sort of perceived it as country, charted on the country charts. And then I remember seeing you live and I go, you know, she's not a country artist at all. I mean, she's country, but she's doing all these other things, which explains to me, like, the Buffalo Clover section of the book, where you're really doing everything. There was no music that you were kind of not at least somewhat conversant with, it seemed to me. Like, you had this wide body of experience and stuff that you really loved, and you chose to focus on the country stuff for that one record. But I'm curious about that experience, how that informed you as a songwriter, you know, having this wide body of stuff that you would write in that particular vernacular, and then you would jump to something else and do something else. How did that inform you as a songwriter in developing over the years?
Well, I think especially when people do come see us live, it's more than just a country show. You know, we've been studying psychedelia and soul music.
I went down to the county jail and turned myself in. Spending all my weekends here, far from my good time and friends. Baby, things went bad and things went worse. I guess you know the end. The only thing I know for sure is I ain't going back again.
For a while, we were just listening to the Rolling Stones and just trying to write rock and roll, which I think, like, could use more of a resurrection than country music. Like, Where is that scene, and where is that now?
Well, you write so movingly about Joni Mitchell. Oh, I mean, I'd be a heck of a music critic, Margo.
Yeah, I am. I tell you what, in the privacy of my own home and the things that I don't put on Twitter, I've really had to learn to, like, watch my mouth and not try to, like, you know, put down people who are really just trying to express their soul. But I think I get so fired up about music and about just visual art also, because that's what art does. It evokes feelings within us. But for sure, I know a lot of people would probably just prefer that I just stick to making, like, traditional country records and, like, you know, that old school country funk stuff, which I think really is my bread and butter. But I'm just too, I don't know. I'm just too interested in doing other things. To stick with just one genre. And I think it really makes you well-rounded if you're, you know, there's so much music out there. Like, why would you limit yourself to just one thing?
You know, I want to get your take too on Loretta Lynn. I know that you knew Loretta, you know, she obviously just passed at age 90 in her sleep. You know, it just seemed like a beautiful way to end a beautiful life in a lot of ways, you know. But the parallels between your career and hers, you know, she wasn't making records until she was 30. She'd already had, like, four kids by that point. You are a mother. And you're like Loretta in some ways, a late bloomer in terms of the public knowing about you. Did you talk to Loretta at all about her career path? Did that inform any of the way you approached things?
100%. When I finally got the opportunity to sit down with her, we were backstage at Blackberry Farms in Tennessee, and it was just such a moving conversation. Her daughter, Patsy, brought me back there, and she was saying, oh, Loretta, you and Margo, you have so much in common, you know, and was kind of talking about some of the stuff you said. And she said, and you're both, your birthdays are just one day apart. Loretta's April 14th, I'm April 15th. She's like, you're both colorblind, and, you know, you're both real, you're both real fiery, and you've both also, you know, lost a child. And Loretta turned to Patsy and she said, Now shut up, Patsy. Who the hell would want to talk about something like that right now? And she got all, and it was, you know, just a way to break the ice in a way. But we sat there and spoke for a long time. And I spoke to, you know, Patsy and Peggy and Loretta all about how it worked, how she could do what she did and have a family. Because even now, I'm really still trying to navigate that with my daughter being three, who ended up being named after Loretta. Because when I found out that I was pregnant in 2018, I thought, you know, here I am. I'm in my mid-30s. I'm a woman. I just got my career off the ground, and now I'm knocked up. And I just kind of saw everything just like that I had worked for and everything just shatter before me. And it just makes me cry. Loretta just, she just said, do not worry about that. Like, your fan base is going to accept you, and you can have as many babies as you want. And you don't have to be worried about that. And it was a real relief. And so then when I ended up being, as Jack said, I was 10 months pregnant when I was singing at her birthday tribute. Been pregnant for 4 years. And and she just gave me so much confidence and just really kind of set my mind at ease when I was very worried about what all that was going to do to my career.
Here in Topeka, the rain is a falling, the faucet is a dripping, and the kids are bawling. One of them is toddling, and one is a crawling, and one's on the way.
When we return, we'll have more with Margo Price. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions.
$1 million pack.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we're back. We're talking with Margo Price about her book, Maybe We'll Make It.
Margo, there's so much in Maybe We'll Make It that is both very, very personal, but also universal. When you're writing about the loss of your child, when you're writing about your struggles toward to fight off addiction, you know, alcoholism. Yet there's another theme that I think pairs this with another book that we just talked about on Sound Opinions as absolutely necessary. Decades late, we interviewed Marissa Moss, who wrote Her Country, who's talking about the ingrained sexism that Loretta Lynn battled and that artists today are battling. Let me come at this from a very particular way. You know, you're from small town Illinois. We're in Chicago. It's like two separate worlds. You know, you come to Chicago and you're talking to one of the most respected indie labels. You know, you don't name them. And they say, we've got two women on our roster. And so it's not just the big Nashville corporate machine that is permeated by sexism. Well, but you can't have more than two women, Greg, right? You know, and it's like, and that's in quote unquote enlightened Chicago.
Yeah.
That you got this. Talk about the sexism in particular that is so brutal to anybody playing rootsy music.
Well, yeah, this was an indie label. And actually, let's see, I got turned down by label in Chicago, but I also got turned down by this indie label here in Nashville that is still operating.
Okay.
And I won't say their name because I have some friends that are on their label and I don't want to trash talk them, but they have since signed a lot more women. And it just was mind-blowing to me that, you know, they basically didn't even say if they listened to the record or not. They just said, oh, we've got two girls. And, you know, like I said, it was an indie label. It was like, somebody that you would really think is not going to be affected by those small thoughts. But that crushed me and it angered me. And again, like I said, it was just like, well, I had something to prove at that point. And so when Third Man picked me up, that was a real like, F you to all those people.
I rolled out of town on the unpaved road. I was $57 from being broke. Kissed my mama and my sisters, and I said goodbye. And with my suitcase packed, I wiped the tears from my eyes.
Like, had I signed to this label that I'm talking about, either one of them, the one up there in Chicago or this other one, it would not have had the same impact. I know that 100% because Third Man had yet to dip their toes into signing any new country artists, you know, to have their endorsement and to have all that steam behind me. Like, I could never repay Third Man for just how they handled that whole campaign and how they believed in me. And I wish that I would have thought to send it to him sooner because I spent a year in purgatory, as I like to call it, just kind of sitting there like waiting with, we'd sold the car and it was a year went by like, wow, I was not doing well.
Well, and you were doing it the old school way, you know, for lack of a better term. You were, you know, as I joked earlier, you know, the social media wasn't really a part of it. I mean, a lot of bands now would have said, okay, let's just put our music out on the internet and let people find it that way. I was fascinated by that you had sort of done it this way because it seemed like that was important to you. Like, you could have talked to some people and said, oh, Marco, you should do it this way. And maybe you even got that advice and chose to ignore it. I'm curious about that decision. The route you took is not the route that a lot of young artists are taking these days to get their music out into the world.
Well, I guess it saves them a lot of grief to just like, you know, now to be able to go on TikTok or on YouTube and just like upload the thing and have some kind of instant success. I wouldn't trade my years of like, riding in an Econoline van all over the United States and just meeting people. And a lot of times I was getting suggestions that I should either change the music, you know, make it less like rootsy sounding, make it like more modern or whatever. And I didn't take any of that advice. And I also had people telling me all the time, you should go on Nashville Star and you should go on, you know, The Voice or American Idol or any of these things. And I was like, that's just not my vibe. I think that, you know, I'm not very good at bluffing. And if I don't like something, like, I'm just not going to do it. And even as my career's taken off, there's been so many times where people have like suggested that I collaborate with, you know, this like Joe Schmo major label bro. And I'm like, I'm really sorry. I can't do it. And, you know, I know I'd have like millions of Spotify plays or whatever the goal is. But for me, it's not a blood sport. It's just like about, yeah, making the music mean something to you.
Woke up from a movie, I immediately forgot. Got a heartache on the bottom and a headache on the top. The part of me that hurts the worst is the one I just can't spot. And it's all American.
Your one concession to convention was hiring John Cerrata as your booking agent.
Yeah, if you can't beat him, join him.
You got to tell that story because that is just such an insight into the way the industry would work for decades.
Have you ever read that book, The Art of War? It's like, you know, you got to look at what chess pieces you have on the board and like how you can manipulate the game. Because I was trying to find like people to manage us. And, you know, we had some friends that had some good managers and took a couple meetings with people, but nobody was really interested in representing us. And I knew that, you know, being a woman, sending the emails out to, hey, can my band play your club? I've got 200 MySpace followers and, you know, not a lot going for me. But the second that you introduce someone else as your manager, your representation, it legitimizes you. So that's what we did. We just created a whole alter ego. And this guy, he would book the shows. He would do the advancing and everything. And then, like I said, if we showed up and something was wrong, you know, we started getting yelled at by the booking agent or the booker about the ticket sales not being good or about, you know, posters not being there on time or something. Oh, that was John Cerrata. He's such a mess. So it was a good hustle. We booked a ton of gigs that way. We really, really did. And I actually suggest that to anybody else out there that can't get anything going for you. Just use anything you can. You have to be resourceful when you're poor and you have no connections.
Like some of the great books about the working class, you know, Studs Terkel, going back to one of the best, you know, working. You know, the stories you tell about the jobs you had to have. I'm thinking in particular about your time waitressing at a bar restaurant where you were required to wear a Catholic schoolgirl uniform. And put up with the gentleman. I use that's a misnomer completely. Saying stuff, grabbing places. I was like, oh my God. Were you thinking during horrible ordeals? There's so many of them described throughout the book like that. Were you thinking like a writer? Well, at least I'm getting material. Or were you just thinking, I got 6 more hours to get through this shift?
Oh man, I was thinking about the cash and again about like using what I had, which was great legs, to get tips.
Practical. You were thinking practical.
I mean, you know, it was like, that place was hard. It actually just closed not too long ago. I would get so fed up with it and I would quit. And then Brandy, my boss, she would always invite me back and she'd be like, you're such a good waitress. You're such a hard worker. And, you know, I know that you're unreliable at times, but when I did show up, you know, it was on. And I actually, sometimes I really miss like bartending and waitressing because you get to talk to so many people and, you know, it's like you get to meet so many interesting people. I was just messaging with Carrie Ann Hurst, who I mentioned in my book From Shovels and Rope. And she's like, do you still have waitressing dreams? Because I do sometimes. I'm like, I actually do.
Your book ends on a hopeful note, you know, you've made the record for Third Man, the first one. You're on Saturday Night Live. You're joking about it because you're staying in this hovel of a hotel a few weeks afterward, but you're still going, we played Saturday Night Live.
Once again, Margot Price.
Since you put me down, I've been drinking just to drown. I've been lying through the cracks of my teeth.
It's a relatively optimistic ending. What obstacles or what has occurred since the book ends in your career, in your life, where you say, okay, things have turned around. It's better than it was. Or how have things been?
Things have been all over the place, but more good than bad. You know, like I said, I took another really big mushroom trip. I gave up the booze. I'm not sober, but I'm just feeling better than I have in years. I'm really looking forward to releasing this album that I did with Jonathan Wilson in January of 23. And cool. Yeah, of course I'm going to write another book. I, you know, I ended off like kind of with the SNL and that little moment there. But I have just been like really collecting stories from the road, I've hung out with just about everybody that I ever could have imagined wanting to meet, aside from like Tom Petty and you know, I haven't got to sit down and have a conversation with Bob Dylan, except in my dreams. but it's just been absolutely wild. And this last book, it doesn't have a lot of like name drops and not that I would, you know, write it for that, but like the stories that I have got to have, partying in some really cool hotel rooms and just conversations that I've got to have with my heroes and mentors. Like, I would love to write a book that's kind of like a collection of just like short stories and interactions from the road. And, you know, a lot of it could be lucid too, but yeah, I definitely plan on writing another book. Like, I didn't have a ghostwriter, so I'm addicted now.
The book is extremely well written. And I was just curious, did you always have aspirations to write a book? I mean, I wasn't aware that the memoir, you know, was in your bones when the last time I talked to you, but now here it is, and it's great. When did this idea occur? Has it been bubbling all along?
Yeah, I've always been a really avid reader, and I think that, you know, how you have to be reading lots of things, watching lots of great film, and taking in a lot of other kinds of art to really to produce good songs. But like I said, I've had several people ask me, like, did you have a ghostwriter for your book? I'm like, no, I worked on this for 5 years, and it consumed me, and I'd always wanted to do it. I had made several other attempts before to write fiction, to write collections of short stories and poems, and then, you know, my computer would crash or I would just lose interest or whatever. But I'm glad that I finally dedicated the time to it and got it out, because that's what I want more than anything, to be taken seriously as a writer, as a songwriter and a writer. And, you know, a lot of times people just introduce me as like country singer, and I'm like, no, there's more there than just that. So thank you for taking time to read it.
Maybe we'll make it. Is the name of the book. We highly recommend it. Thank you, Margot, so much for being on the show.
Hey, thank y'all so much for
looking
having
forward
me.
To this new music.
Yeah.
That wraps up our conversation with the great Margot Price, and now we want to hear from you. What music memoir is your favorite? leave us a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org, or start a conversation in our Patreon community or in the Facebook group. Mr. Cott, what is on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, drumroll please. The best albums of 2022 are at least our personal favorites. And don't forget to check out our bonus podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts.
Indeed, we live for that year-end best-of show. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors. Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our Columbia College intern is Lauren Holt, and our social media consultant is Katie Cott.
Is your muffin buttered? Would you like us to assign?